Parshas Va'era. I'd like to focus this week on suffering. There's no doubt that Klal Yisrael witnessed most incredible suffering done by Kodesh Baruch to the Mitzrayim. Midah keneged midah, measure for measure, what the Mitzrayim did to Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael watched with amusement, I'm sure, with satisfaction to a certain extent, how Kodesh Baruch Hu literally wiped out midah keneged midah, measure for measure, Mitzrayim, and used every form of natural consequence to actually hit Mitzrayim on the water supply, with Sephardea, with Kinim. Every single pleasure Mitzrayim had was one by one annihilated, thrown out, killed in every form by Kodesh Baruch Hu. Their animals, their homes, everything was terrorized by the Asura Makkos. And there's no doubt that Mitzrayim suffered irreversible damage what Kodesh Baruch Hu did to them, and there's no doubt that they were traumatized for generations to come. But there's something I want to pick out from this particular parasha, that most of the suffering that actually was incurred upon the Mitzrayim was brought upon themselves. They could have got away with it. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought suffering upon them, absolutely, but the Maisa, they caused themselves more to suffer than HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually had in mind that they should be suffering. And their bad midas caused them to suffer a lot more than they had to suffer. And now, again, Mitzrayim is a historical fact. We live thousands of years later, but we live our life as Eicher Yisias Mitzrayim. In other words, the way we run our Shabbos, the way we run our midas, the way we have our Pesach, everything we do is based on the knowledge and belief of what happened in Yisias Mitzrayim actually affects our day-to-day life. And therefore, let us get to understand how the Mitzrayim were their own worst enemies, and understand for ourselves how to prevent these things happening to ourselves. The Gemara says, "Hakol midei shemayim chutz mitzinim upachim." Everything is from shemayim besides illnesses that come through heat and through cold. In other words, a person believes they have a cold or they're not well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did he make me suffer? And they have times on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they have complaints against Hashem. In reality, not only was HaKadosh Baruch Hu not responsible, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu will actually take that person to task for making himself ill and not being able to function the way he should be in his spiritual life. If he can't get out of bed in the morning because of a terrible screaming cold and he misses Shacharis, he'll get punished for that. If he can't do Chesed, he'll get punished for that. And therefore, don't come along and say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did you do it to me? You did it to yourself! And you get punished for that. And therefore, let's see this parasha, and we'll see in this parasha how a person is sometimes their own worst enemy. How they can cause the tzar to come upon themselves. Not only cannot say to Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, take away my affairs because of all the suffering, you'll get punished for causing yourself to suffer. Okay? So let's see. Yep. The Pasuk says that this. Kodesh Baruch Hu says Moshe to Moshe and Aaron, go along and tell Pari. This is in Perek Vav, Pasuk Gimel. Go and warn Klal Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim. Okay? The Pasuk says, beforehand, in Pasuk Tes, by Davin Moshe, Kain al Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Shomu el Moshe. They did not listen to Moshe. Mikoytze ruach uma avoida kosher. From short breath and hard work. In other words, they didn't listen to Moshe because they were terribly, terribly tortured. Klal Yisrael did not go through, you know, just hard labor. They went through a holocaust. Babies were butchered on a day-to-day basis just to keep Paro's leprosy under control. Their babies stuffed into walls if they didn't manage to supply enough bricks. They went through a horrendous, horrendous, ongoing holocaust. Centuries, 210 years. Some people never saw the light of Yisias Mitzrayim. They just lived in a world of holocaust. People just coming into the house, beating them, making men do women's jobs, women doing men's jobs, almost like today, right? But it was absolutely horrendous. What was going on there? And the Maisa, Klal Yisrael didn't listen to Moshe. Why? Mikoytze ruach mavoda kosher. It was too much for them. They couldn't listen. So the parasha later on, the pasuk says, Hein b'nei shol yishma lai ve'eich yishma eni pari. How will pari listen to me? Yeah? Says Rashi, this is one of the kal v'chomus. The 10 kal v'chomus in the Torah. That if Klal Yisrael don't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Moshe Rabbeinu's words for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeah? How will pari listen? Now this is a form of a kal v'chomus. Kal v'chomus is a way where you take something which is kal, and according to logic, something which is more chomor should be learnt from the kal. If you drive 110 on a 100 road, you get a parking ticket. If you drive 150, for sure you get a parking ticket. That's a kal v'chomer. Now, what's a kal v'chomer over here? If Klal Yisrael never listened to us, how will Parah listen to us? That's a kal v'chomer. Okay? Ask the Mashah already, what kind of kal v'chomer is this? Klal Yisrael never listened to Moshe Rabbeinu for a very good reason. You know why? Because they were tortured. Because they were overworked. Because they were absolutely being put through the grinder. That's why they can't listen to Moshe. Parah can. Parah sitting on his little throne there, sitting pinnacle being cooled with these big feather coolers. You know these famous pictures, these feather coolers and two little black people just cooling him down. I mean, that's why he's sitting there. He wasn't a Veda Kosher. He wasn't a Veda Kosher. So what's a Kal V'chomer? Parah should be able to listen and Klal Yisrael can't. What's a Kal V'chomer Shabbat Torah? What's the Kal V'chomer? So the Sfasema says something very nice, Agav. The Sfasema says that the level of Klal Yisrael always creates a phenomenon in the world. In other words, if Klal Yisrael are at a level that they can't listen to Hashem's word, it's not possible that the Goyim can listen to Hashem's word. In other words, Klal Yisrael always pull up the world. If Klal Yisrael can't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kol Shekein, Kal V'chomer, Parah can't. The Sfasema. Very nice. It's got a whole piece, a very beautiful piece. But the Kal V'chomer has a tircha. The Kal V'chomer has a problem with it. It doesn't seem to flow. Klal Yisrael can't listen, Pari should. What's the Kal V'chomer? Answers the Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi something beautiful. Really, it's genius. He says, Pari had everything. Pari really had everything. He had wealth. Had literally the world's eating out of his hands. Literally. I mean, he had the whole world's supply of food. He had an empire. He had strength. He was a world leader in science, in philosophy, in astrology, in astronomy, and all these different things. Unbelievable what the stream knew. It was phenomenal. He ran the world in medicine. They were completely the peak of civilization at that time. You know what? But Pari wanted something else. He wanted to be a god. He wanted to be a god. It's not enough. The Pasuk says, Li Yo'iri Vani Asasani. I created the Yo'iri, the Yo'ir, I created the water, and I made it. Pasuk in Yecheskel. In other words, Pari said, I am a god. Which is, obviously, you know, very beneficial if you're walking around with your business card. That says, Pari, you know, God and King of Egypt. Okay? But there are drawbacks. Being a god has serious drawbacks. One of the drawbacks are, you can't go to the bathroom whenever you want.
Tuesday, I forgot. Tuesday, Nitche. Nitche. Apologize.
You can't go...
Did you tell me earlier, what about
Amorim? You can't go to the bathroom whenever you want. That's a serious drawback. Now, Paroi is sitting there, on his chair, and he's had some wicked curry the night before. Good Egyptian curry. And there he's sitting there, and he's got all the heads of state are sitting right there, right? And Paroi can't wince. Forget about go out. Where are you going? You know, everyone coming with him and kissing his feet and kissing his hands. He can't wince. He can't move. His stomach is churning. There's sweat pouring out of his forehead. And he can't move. Nothing. He's stuck. Until tomorrow morning, there's nothing to talk about. Okay? So probably his whole diet is based on what he can and can't eat. But that's not very godly. No, I don't. I'm a vegetarian. God's a vegetarian, right? So he can't do such a thing. Right? So he's running his whole life, he's under trauma, he's anxious. All anxieties. Now, even then, when he can go, what happens if he's going down to the Yo'ir, going down to the river, and it happens to be very early in the morning, yeah, even if he's put an alarm clock on very, very early, long before anyone would ever possibly see him. In other words, you've got to get somebody secretly waking him up, so he can't even sleep. Yeah, he's not eating properly, he's not sleeping properly. And now, he finds somebody going out with a stroll, you know, walking a dog along the Yo'ir. And they find Paroi doing what he's doing. Can you imagine? That is it. The whole house of cards comes crumbling down. Paroi is not a king. Paroi is not a god. He's a king, not a god. Can you imagine? Sensational. Unbelievable. Paul is worried about that. He is worried day and night. What's going to be if they find out that I'm not a god? Now, Baisai, who's under more pressure? Who's under more stress? Somebody has an honest day's work, who comes and slaves and works hard and builds and breaks and does everything. Or Paroi, who comes every second of the day. He's worried, what's going to be if they find me out? How am I going to, how am I going to function then? What am I going to do? When can I go to the bathroom? Why does somebody find me? He is completely preoccupied with looking after himself. Therefore, the Kal Vachomer is a very good Kal Vachomer. Klal Yisrael that only goes through a physical labor, having a hard day's work, that's one thing. That's one thing. Okay. But Eich Yishmeini Paroi, how will Paroi listen to me? He's going through every minute of the day, he's anxious. What's going to be? Well, if they find me out, and I've got a stomachache, and I better not eat this, I better not eat that. Eich Yishmeini Paroi. How will Paroi possibly listen to me when he's so preoccupied with keeping and running a double life? This is the lesson of number one in suffering. Suffering is brought on upon a person very often by Kodesh Baruch Hu, but very, very often brought upon a person by himself, running a double life, pretending as somebody that they aren't. Whether it's a scandal, whether this scandal or that scandal, it breaks, finally people find out what's going on. People running a double life, lying and lying, covering their tracks, switching, changing, pretending. Their whole life is run in the anxiety that they brought upon themselves. You get people who have everything. You have sportsmen who have wealth, they have fame, you have business sportsmen of the year, and you find them involved in scandals, of terrible scandals. Why? What for? A shikul mul taiva. I want to be the king as well, I want to be the god as well. That is the koach of bringing tzaros upon yourself. And you know what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to you, you have to pay for that. All that tzaros you worry about yourself, you're going to get paid, you have to pay for that as well, because you weren't involved in doing good and doing chesed and doing avodas Hashem in that time that you're worrying. How many people spend money that they don't have on things they don't like to impress people they don't know? Weddings, these huge weddings, I've got to keep up an image. And then you've got to pay the money back. Anxieties, nervous breakdowns. Why? Because I'm trying to keep up an image. You brought suffering upon yourself. Nobody asked you to make this image. Don't be such a schnitzer. Calm down. Don't be so good. Okay, nobody thinks you're the wealthiest guy in the community. Big deal. Take it easy. That's the first lesson of suffering. Napoleon was a very, very great man. He really was. In many ways, you know, there's even some people thought he was Mashiach. Yeah, there's a whole lot of people thought he was Mashiach. But Napoleon had one problem. He thought he was Napoleon. That was his problem. Napoleon thought he was Napoleon. And he had such gaiva. And he had such taiva. And when they came in conflict one with the other, it was incredible. There's a time where Napoleon, well, in the middle of the night, he's sitting in one battlefield in the middle of Russia somewhere, and he's very, very thirsty. So he wanted to go out and get a bottle of water. So he thinks to himself, oh, Napoleon's thirsty, gotta get a bottle of water. He thinks, what, me, the king? Go out and get a bottle of water? What a busher, they should bring me the water. I'm not going. He goes back to bed, lying in bed. But Napoleon's thirsty, Napoleon should be thirsty. Napoleon's thirsty, I should be thirsty. I'm the king of France, I should be thirsty. No way, I'm going out getting a bottle of water. Goes up to the edge of his tent. I should bring my own bottle of water. Just bring me a bottle of water. Goes back to bed. This goes on the whole night. Yeah? Meshugana! Go out, get yourself a bottle of water, go back to bed. You get same thing with a chazan. You get a chazan who stands there, you know, his beautiful voice, standing by the omud, and he's, Hinani, hiyoni, mimas. What am I? I'm a nothing. Oh, what a nothing I am. What a nothing. Wow, what a lucky community to have such a nothing like me to be the chazan. Whoa. Not only do I have a voice, I'm an onav as well. What an onav. Well, that's gaiva. One second. If I say I'm an onav, that's gaiva. What a balgaiva. Well, look at you. You should not shame yourself, you're a balgaiva. Terrible. You stand in a hinder on him in mass, you're nothing, and you're a balgaiva. Oh, look at me, working my middos. Look at me, what an honor. Aye, what an honor. And this goes backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. You know what the Balaam Musa say? Take your talus off your head, turn around. You see, everyone's laughing at you. Your davening's not a davening. Everyone thinks you're a bargeiver. Everyone thinks you're crazy. Just turn around, you see what's going on. The Balaam Musa say that. They're all laughing at you, yeah? People bring themselves such sorrows because they're living a double life. Live straight. Live MS. You don't have to lie. You don't have to lie to live straight. Anxiety is brought upon a person by themselves. That's the first lesson. Paroi had a lot of sorrows. But Kal Vachomer, the Kal Vachomer Paroi, Eich Yishmeini Paroi, How Paro listened to me. He's so self-absorbed with leading a double life, with faking and lying, that it's not possible for him to listen. That's number one. Number two, I want to move on to another idea. We discussed this in previous years. It's the famous Yesoid of the Stipler. The Stipler says like this. The Tau Hatzer Fardea. The frog. Yeah, this big, ugly, riveting frog came out of the Nile. Okay? Now, it's a very important vault. We've said this many times. I want to say it over again. This big frog came out. Okay? Now, this frog's jumping up and down. Says the Medrash, it says Sefardea and says Sefardeim. The frog and the frogs. So how do they come from frog to frogs? Marikas and Medrash. One Medrash says, this frog stood up and made a massive, had on a PA system. All frogs come to Mitzrayim, and all started hopping from all over, from Syria and from Lebanon. All the frogs came inside there, through the borders, and hopped into Mitzrayim and made a merry there. Yeah? Another pshat is, Sefardea was, they had one big Sefardea and they hit it. And as they hit it, a whole stream of frogs jumped out of its mouth. Yeah? That's a Medrash. And then they hit it again. What a chutzpah! Ah, mostly, blah, jumped out of his mouth. And started hitting these frogs, and more came out of their mouth, until the time that Shrine was full of frogs. After Stifler, you know what they could have done? Made a law. Anyone who hits a frog is going to be chucked into the Nile. That's it. That's it. No such thing as hitting a frog. You idiots! You can see what's going on here. You see the frogs. You see the problems with them. Don't hit the frogs. Yeah, like big size. Don't fish. Don't hit the frog. You'll have one frog jumping up and down, maybe two or three frogs jumping up and down, and that's it. No makor. Says the stifler, you know what? That's kas. That is anger. What's anger? There's an action. And there's, what a chutzpah. He said that to me? I'm going to give him. There's a reaction. And the other person reacts to that. And it gets worse and worse and worse until we have an entire plague of frogs going into our stomach, crawling under our skin. If a person just realizes how foolish it is, how counterproductive it is, to react to a silly, ugly, jumping up and down frog, life would be better. How many marriages fall apart? Beautiful weddings, chosn and color, smiling next to each other, honeymoons, everything's going fantastic, and years later there's kids, and there's a broken marriage. You know why? Sometimes, not always, but sometimes, there's an action and there's a reaction. He says something, and she says something. And she says something, he says something. He walks out the house, slams the door, she locks him out. Yeah, he locks him out, he changes the locks, he kicks her out of the house. Yeah, and the whole place is World War III. Action, reaction. Who asked you to do it? How asked you to do it? I want to tell you a Mordechai story. I heard a story from Pesach Kron. Pesach Kron said this story over. There was a woman and a husband and wife who had 8 children. They lived in New York. And during the holidays, during the vacation time, she would go up to the Catskill Mountains, and he'd carry on working. And Baruch Hashem had a wonderful marriage, had 8 kids, everything was going very well. The only difference was that he was very, very particular and tidy, and she was, you know, one term, whatever. Yeah, things were flying, you know, the house, you'd open the doors, the cupboard doors in the bedroom, and all the clothes would fall in. You know, that kind of thing. And when he'd say anything, she'd say, okay, it's a lo chashuv. It's a lo chashuv. You know, which is quite annoying within itself. But, you know, it's a lo chashuv. You know, it's not so important. Baruch Hashem, we've got healthy kids. Baruch Hashem, we've got a great marriage. Baruch Hashem, we have a panasa. Okay. So as you come inside, you've got to climb over the table to reach the fridge. But it doesn't matter. It's a lo chashuv. Lo chashuv. Anyway, she's in the Catskills, pregnant with a 9th child, Baruch Hashem. And she phones him up and says to him, do me a favor. I run out of checks. Please bring a couple of checkbooks up. No problem. Thursday night, he remembers. Friday morning, he said, before you come up to me, do me a favor, bring a bit of kishka, a bit of cholent, but also please bring the checkbooks. Very important. I haven't forgotten. I put them in my jacket pocket. I'm going to bring them up. Fine. He puts them in the jacket pocket. He drives up to the Catskills. He brings her the checkbooks, a whole bag full of stuff, the toys, the books, whatever, and the 2 checkbooks. She takes it, hangs it on the crib. Motzei Shabbos, he looks out, and the checkbooks are still there, sticking out of the crib. There's kids running all over the place, a bungalow colony is, it's hoiva voyu in a modern term. Stuff all over the place, chickens, goats, and kids, all that. And he got this 2 checkbooks sticking out of the bags. He thought to himself, you know what, why doesn't she just take the things, put it in a handbag, it's safer. You know what, he's not going to get involved, I'm not going to get angry. He goes back to work on Sunday, comes back the next week. Next week, Friday, he's still sitting there in the same place, 2 checkbooks untouched. She's so nervous. She's so worried about the checkbooks. You know, warned you twice not to forget. What's the big deal? Take them and put them in the handbag. You know what? I'm not going to say anything. So lo chashuv. Monday, he goes back to work, and it's still hanging in the same place, untouched. He's not going to say anything. Lo chashuv. Wednesday, he gets a phone call at work. There's been complications in the pregnancy. Please come back as quickly as possible. He comes back, and unfortunately, his wife had not made it. His wife was nifta. The nice, doing it, pregnancy of a nice child, and that where his wife was nifta. The first check he wrote was to the Chevra Kedisha, out of that checkbook. The second check he wrote was to the funeral service. I'm not sure the difference of the two, but that's the second check. All sat shiva, him and his eight children sat shiva. At the end, he took the whole bag, the way it was, and hung it up in the cupboard, and wrote three words on it. Ze lo chashuv. He remembered. Imagine, the last thing he did when he left the house, on the way to work, would have had a big bust up with his wife. I told you, a week and a half already, his checkbooks are standing there. Put them away! Ze lo chashuv, he remembered. And all he remembered was the fact that he had shalom bayis, that he kept his mouth shut, he let it pass. Ze lo chashuv. Pesach Kron was in America, in Baltimore. He gave out little cards to everyone who was there. He said three words in it. Ze lo chashuv. I believe every married man should have that in his wallet. Ze lo chashuv. Not important, let it go. The whole plague of Makas Sephardea took place because of ignoring ze lo chashuv. Taking things seriously, let things go, road rage. Road rage. You know, the guy cuts you off, you run after him, he slices tires, you beat him up. What's all this about? Ze lo chashuv, let it go. Let it go. Ze lo chashuv. That's the second lesson. The third idea is a phenomenal, phenomenal Chasam Sefer. Now you have to understand, Rabbi Yisai, the Chasam Sefer wasn't stum as Perish on the Chumash. He just sees the Chumash, he sees Torah with different eyes. Mamash eyes that are kamat like a malach. Unbelievable. Look at this unbelievable vort. I'm telling you. I just saw it the first time this year, and I told a few different people, everyone who told it over to, they told other people, they are nibble b'nishleiman there, they're so impressed by this vod. The vod says it's like this. In Perek Zayin, like this, Perek Zayin, Posuk Vov and Zayin, so that's Posuk, like this. Vayas Moshe v'Aaron, kash tziva Hashem oisom kein osu. Okay? Moshe and Aaron did, like Hashem commanded them, kash tziva Hashem oisom, Cain Osu. Again, let's translate. Moshe Aaron did, like Hashem commanded them, so they did. Moshe ben Shmoinim Shana, Moshe was 80 years old. Va'aron and Aaron was ben Sholosh Shmoinim Shana, was 83 years old. Badabram and Pari when they spoke to Pari. Now, a few questions ask some sefer. Number one, Vayas Moshe Aaron Kashtiva Hashem Oysom. What? What did they do? They have done nothing yet. Or very little. So what's this referring to? Vayas Moshe and they did. They didn't do anything. Number one. Number two, what's Vayas Moshe va'aron? What should it say? Then all puns. Vayasu. And they did. Vayasu Moshe va'aron. What's Vayas Moshe va'aron? Yeah? What's Vayasu Moshe va'aron? Number two. Okay? Then see you say it's about over. I guarantee you'll get a kiss from your father. Okay? Thirdly, what's the shout, the repetition? Cain Osu. Vayas Moshe va'aron kashtev Hashem oisam. Cain also, so they did. It just said they did, so they did. Now, what's this repetition all about?
So he did.
So he did. Cain also, no, also.
He said they did. Now we're saying Cain also, so they did.
So they did. What's this, so they did? Well, what's this repetition? What's this repetition?
He did is
the thing
to put Moshe
Aaron. Yeah, Moshe Aaron. What's this repetition? He said it. Number four. Another question. The Pasuk said, and they were 80 and 83 when they spoke to Paroi. Wow, gewaldig. Why did it say they were 1883 and Hashem spoke to them? Why connect speaking to about in front of Pari? Big deal! Speak in front of Pari, speak in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Says the Chasam Sefer like this. The Gemara says, if a person is sick and they have a dream they're going to get better, it's a very, very good omen, it's a very good sign. Why? Because it has a connection with the Rabbeinu Shalom. Connecting with the Rabbeinu Shalom brings health. Okay? Now, the Gemara says that a chaloim is a 60th of Nevuah. a dream is a 60th of prophecy. Now, if a 60th of prophecy can bring a person health, how much more can prophecy bring a person health? Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu were Nevi'im. But not only Nevi'im, they were super Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu was a super Navi. And therefore, how much more, if a person of just a 60th of relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu can make him better, how much can a proper Nevoah invigorate a person, rejuvenate a person, and how much more for Moshe, who is the greatest level of Nevoah ever there was and ever will be? He must have been like a young boy. You know, even when he's old, he must have been fresh at anything, like we see at the end of the Torah. Lo yinasecha, but because of Enoch, his eyes never dimmed. He was completely fresh. Yes? Now, that's Peshat in the Pasuk. Vayas Moshe v'Aaron. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a new Moshe v'Aaron, kasha tziva Hashem oisom. When Hashem spoke to them, there was a new Moshe v'Aaron here. There wasn't an old Moshe v'Aaron, 1883-year-old. No! There was a whole new Moshe v'Aaron here. They were completely new. They were rejuvenated. They were young. They were youthful. Yes? They became totally young. Not only that, those people had connection with Moshe v'Aaron, the Gemara says, that the Meisei Midbar, those who died in the Midbar, never turned into worm food. They never rotted, because there was a certain youth that they kept. Even meeting Moshe v'Aaron made an impact, kept a youthfulness that never left them for generations. So Vayas Moshe v'Aaron, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, singular, made Moshe v'Aaron. Where did he make them? When did he regenerate them, rejuvenate them, make them new? When Hashem commanded them, when Hashem gave them the Nevuah, they were new Moshe v'Aaron. So who's singular? Vayas is who? Hashem. Vayas is Hashem. Hashem made Moshe v'Aaron. Hashem made a new Moshe v'Aaron when? When Hashem had a relationship with them, Hashem spoke to them, he made a new Moshe v'Aaron. Not only that, Cain also, they did to other people. When they spoke to other people, they rejuvenated them too, they made them young as well. That was Dafka when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a relationship with them. But Moshe, Rabbeisai, Moshe ben Shmoyim Shana, Moshe was 80 years old, and Aaron was 83, back to the old age, Moshe and Aaron, Bedabramel Pari when he spoke in front of Pari. Pari was so tumma, he was so negative, he was so anti, that he took away all their pleasure, all their youth, all the rejuvenation, and he made them like old men again when he spoke in front of Pari. In other words, when they were speaking to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they were completely young and fresh. But yes, made them a new Asi, made them new. But when standing in front of Pari, they were back to the old 18, 83 years old. All the positive effect they had from the Kodesh Baruch Hu taken away, they were old people again. That's Peshat in the Pasuk. So the yes, Moshe Hashem made them new when Kash Tiva Hashem Oysam and Hashem had a relationship and Hashem spoke to them. Not only that, Cain also, they did to other people. That influence of positiveness, they gave over to other people. However, when it's in front of power, they're back to 1883 years old. This has koichas in many different ways, pshatness in many ways. Number one, posh and ruchnius. When a person connects with ruchnius, he's rejuvenated. A person has a mitzvah, he's flying, he's live. When a person has an avera, he feels empty, he feels broken, number one. But more than that, a person who goes through life in a positive light, he sees things positively, he's amongst positive people. They say that a person can fight cancer if he has a good doctor. A good doctor does not mean a person who's an oncologist who knows cancer well. It's a positive doctor. They've made research. People who have a positive outlook live longer and have a better life. A person who doesn't, they're old people. They crech, they're old. It completely breaks you. The Gemara says a sigh breaks you. That's Pshat in this Pasuk. Therefore, a person with a positive outlook can actually make himself young. He can actually rejuvenate himself, actually make himself much, much healthier than he would be if a person has a negative outlook, a person who is cynical, a person who is negative, a person who is pessimistic. These people do not live long. Okay? That's another vault in this week's parasha. I want to finish off with one more limit. The Pasuk says when the Sephardea left, the Pasuk says the Sephardea left. Yes? They left from their houses. Okay, I said this. They asked Hashem to Moshe, "Vayimusa tzvardei me'abotim u'menachatzeirois u'menasodeis." the left from the houses, from the chaseres and from the solids. We know many what's of what? And not from?
The ovens.
The ovens. In other words, they said the frogs went into all the ovens as well. See the spot? You remember from last year, 2 years ago. 3 years ago, I think, even. They said it from the ovens as well. Yeah, they went into the ovens. Why didn't the frogs die from there? The prophet said they didn't die from there, says Darth Canaan. They died, those that were in the fields. Those that were in the houses, they died. But those in the ovens never died. Adkan, Divrei, Das, Balas Canaan. Das Canaan. What's the what? What's the lesson from here? The Sephardim, according to some of the Farshim, had Bechira. They could have had, they had a choice. Both of them were going in there, you know, since tadpoles they were friends, and now they're both hopping into Mitzrayim, you know, ribbit, going to Mitzrayim, now they had a choice. Into the kitchens, yeah, dancing up and down in a milkshake, in the, down the back of some mitzvah or another, or inside the oven. Now, inside the oven is more B'Kiddush Hashem. Mesiris Nefesh. Mesiris Nefesh, right? You know what? One decides to have an easy life. He's going to go in the pool there, he's going to carry mitzvah Hashem by just jumping around having a good time. Fine! He's keeping the word of Hashem, Hashem told us to do that, he's in the bottom of the solid, he's keeping the word of Hashem. The other one, going for extra mile, going for Kiddush Hashem with Mesiris Nefesh, putting myself out, life and limb for the word of Hashem, I'm putting myself in the oven. The guy looks at him, you know, through the oven door there, the glass oven door, and this guy is schwitzing, you know, and all this green paint is coming off. And this other one, no, he's sitting there enjoying life. And he thinks, oh, what a frummer, what an idiot. What for? And what happens in the end? All of them died. No, it didn't die. The one from the oven jumped out and went back and lived a very happy frog life, a happy ever after. What's the idea behind this? The idea is, you think you're giving up for Ruchnius, but with Mesiris Nefesh, you're giving up nothing, you're only gaining. Reb Chaim Kreisler had a most beautiful story. Reb Chaim Kreisler was spoken at Ezer Mitzion function a few years ago. Reb Chaim Kreisler is a god lador, one of the Gedolei Hador previous generation, a few years back was Nifter. He's an Av Basin of Antwerp, 17 years old, he's already a Magid Shir, phenomenal Talmud Chacham, and he was in a certain yeshiva, he doesn't say where. His story is born in Leinu Shabayach. And he went, and he left home and he became a Magid Shir in yeshiva, 17. So the boys were in yeshiva where, you know, there wasn't luxuries, didn't even have beds, it was freezing cold. Literally like sub-Siberian temperatures. And the boys lying on the floor, no carpet, it was freezing cold, but he had a bed because he was a Magid Shir at 17. It was sent to the yeshiva, a boy called Yishai LeMishnah. Yishai LeMishnah, what's Yishai LeMishnah? A blind boy who needed treatment in that area. And they asked Reb Chaim, sent a message to Reb Chaim, is ready, a mover and a doer then, find him a place to sleep. Find him a place to rest up there, and a place to sleep, and a place to board while he's getting treatment from the doctor. Reb Chaim looked here, Reb Chaim looked there, you cannot find him a place to board. Couldn't find him a place. So you have this blind boy, just doing over and over again Mishnayis Balpeh that he learned from other boys, and he should sleep on the bed and his Yishai LeMishnah on the floor. I said, I can't do that. So Yishai LeMishnah slept on the bed, and Reb Chaim lay on the floor. And Yishai LeMishnah didn't even know any better. He didn't even know there was only one bed where Reb Chaim was sleeping. And he had no idea. And he was sleeping there, and he was sleeping there. This wasn't for 1 day, and it wasn't for 2 days, it wasn't for 1 week, it was for months. Absolutely months. And Reb Chaim said it was freezing cold on the floor, he could hardly sleep. And Yishai LeMishnah was watching little Zeds going up, and he was enjoying himself in that warm, cozy bed. And Reb Chaim suffered! He suffered! Fast forward a few years, the Nazis came, I think it was a different yeshiva by then, the Nazis came, and they had a list of all the boys in the yeshiva. And they took them out one by one, and they shot them in the head, and they fed them to a mass grave. Reb Chaim was standing outside there, just behind a couple more of his friends who were being shot, and Reb Chaim said, Rabbeinu Shlomo, I don't know what chusim I have, I don't know. Whether my learning is proper learning, I don't know. Rabbeinu Shlomo, I did one thing, I did one ma'aseh chesed. Look at it, Yishai LeMishnah, please. But that's of course, that mysterious nefesh, to help a boy who wasn't well, to help a boy who's suffering, to make him feel good and make him feel comfortable, Hashem, please save me. The Nazi goes up to him with a gun and looks at his name and says, Kreisler, you look like a talented boy. I'm not going to waste a bullet on you. I'm going to shoot twice into the air and you run off. I never want to see you again. And Reb Chaim ran away. He shot twice and Reb Chaim ran away and he managed to escape and he became Reb Chaim Kreisler. Mysterious nefesh. In other words, a person can have suffering and the person can be put in a position where chas v'sholem, life and death is in the balance, you can save the suffering, you can save your life with mysterious nefesh out of these frogs. One other story. Some of you may have heard this, but I think it's a phenomenal story. Rav Chaim, my Rebbe, used to say over again, Rav Chaim Kaufman said over and over again, there's a family who lived in Meir Shearim, and it was a 3-day yontiv, and you can't even manage to get through a Shabbos with enough food. 3-day yontiv. How do you get a 3-day yontiv? A broch. You know, what did you do? What did you do? So this man, he goes over to his friend and says to him, listen, I haven't got any, I've got Knaino Hara, a big family, I've got nothing to eat on yontiv. Do me a favor, please, can I borrow a chicken? I'll borrow a chicken, let me borrow a chicken, I'll pay you back whenever I have the money. So the man said, listen, I'll tell you the truth, I've got 2 chickens for 3-day yontiv for 8 children. Work out how much that is. I wish I could, you know, but it's just not possible. He said, oh, it's not possible, I'm sorry that I asked, don't feel bad, shkoyach, thank you very much, he walked out the house. The man thinks to himself, this man never asks me for anything. Never! Never! The first time they're asking for something, I can't give him one of my chickens. I should have 2 chickens, he has nothing. Can't do that. He goes over to the freezer, opens the door, and he almost faints. His little baby had managed to crawl into the freezer and close the door behind him. The baby is blue, unconscious. They called that Sala. Within minutes, that Sala came and saved the baby's life. The freezer would have been closed for another, who knows, another minute or two, the child for sure would have died. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Geiver. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that his child should die. However, with a Mesiras Nefesh, with a Chesed done with the Mesiras Nefesh, his child's life was saved. So therefore, this is a parasha. There's many, many more lessons, but this is a parasha. Suffering is given sometimes to a person because they deserve it as an Oinesh and to help them with Surin Shal Avo. But often suffering is brought upon the person themselves. Leading a double life. Pretending somebody you aren't. Being somebody that you're anxious that people are going to find out who you are is your own suffering. That's not Kodesh Baruch. You could save all that by just being honest with the world, being honest who you are, and living a life. Being a king, but not being a god. Number one. Number two, leave the frog alone. Zelo chashuv. Leave it bouncing up and down. Doesn't matter. Ignore it. Nothing will happen. Zelo chashuv. Number two. Number three is the idea of be positive. If Chas V'Shalom Hashem does give nisyonos, be positive. If you're positive, you can be rejuvenated. You can become fresh. If you're optimistic, you have hope. A person pessimistic, it's terrible, I have nothing to do anyway. Yeah. Then there's no hope. A person Chas V'Shalom can just completely be bogged down in sorrows. Nothing can happen. Yeah, you can't won't be able to get help. That's vayas. And finally, even if a person does have sorrows, there is a way out. If a person does chesed in Mesiras Nefesh, a person does Torah in Mesiras Nefesh, a person does in Mesiras Nefesh, then Mesiras Nefesh can actually save a person's life. Vayin Shem should not give us any suffering, Chas V'Shalom. Shem should give us a very, very easy life. But ultimately, the way our life is run and the way we deal with Nisyonos is very, very much up to us and up to the Vayin Shem.